Mr. Sniggs, the junior dean, and Mr. Postlethwaite, the domestic bursar, sat in Mr. Sniggs' room, overlooking the garden quad at Scone College, Oxford. From the rooms of Sir Alistair Digby Vane Trumpington, two staircases away, came a confused roaring. It was the night of the annual dinner of the Bollinger Club. The Bollinger dinner is a difficult time for those in authority. From all over Europe, old members rallied for the occasion. For 2 days they'd been pouring into Oxford. Epileptic royalty from their villas of exile, uncouth peers from crumbling country seats, smooth young men of uncertain tastes from embassies and legations. A shriller note could now be heard rising from Sir Alistair's rooms. Any who have heard that sound will shrink at the recollection of it. It is the sound of the English county families baying for broken glass. Out they tumbled into the quad, crimson and roaring for the real romp of the evening.
"Oh, don't you think it might be wiser if we turned out the light?" said Mr. Sniggs.
In darkness, the two dons crept to the window. The quad below was a kaleidoscope of dimly discernible faces.
"It reminds me of the communist rising in Budapest."
"I know," said Mr. Postlethwaite. Mr. Sniggs' Hungarian reminiscences were well known in Scone College. It was a lovely evening. They broke up Mr. Austin's grand piano and stamped Lord Rending's cigars into his carpet and smashed his china and tore up Mr. Partridge's sheets and threw the Matisse into his lavatory. Sir Alistair Digby Vane Trumpington felt quite ill with excitement and was supported to bed by Lumsden of Strathdrummond. It was 11:30. Soon the evening would come to an end. But there was still a treat to come. Paul Pennyfeather was reading for the church. It was his second year of uneventful residence at Scone. At home, he lived in Onslow Square with his guardian, a prosperous solicitor, who was proud of Paul's progress and abysmally bored by his company. Both his parents had died in India when he was at preparatory school. For 2 years, he lived within his allowance, aided by 2 valuable scholarships. None of the Bollinger Club had ever heard of Paul Pennyfeather, and he, oddly enough, had not heard of them. Little suspecting the incalculable consequences that the evening was to have for him, he bicycled happily back from a meeting of the League of Nations Union. He knocked at the gate, was admitted, put away his bicycle, and diffidently, as always, made his way across the quad towards his rooms. What a lot of people there seemed to be about! Out of the night, Lumsden of Strathdrummond swayed across his path like a druidical rocking stone. Paul tried to pass. Now, it so happened that the tie of Paul's old school bore a marked resemblance to the pale blue and white of the Bollinger Club. The difference of 1/4 inch in the width of the stripes was not one that Lumsden of Strathdrummond was likely to appreciate.
"Here's an awful man wearing the boller tie," said the laird.
Mr. Sniggs looked rather apprehensively at Mr. Postlethwaite.
"They appear to have caught somebody. I hope they don't do him any serious harm."
"They appear," said Mr. Postlethwaite, "to be tearing off his clothes."
"Oh, dear me," said Mr. Sniggs. "I think I ought to intervene."
Mr. Postlethwaite laid a hand on his impetuous colleague's arm.
"No, no, no. It would be unwise. We have the prestige of the senior common room to consider. In their present state, they might not prove amenable to discipline. We must at all costs avoid an outrage."
Next morning, there was a college meeting.
"Now, the case of Mr. Pennyfeather," the master was saying, "seems quite a different matter altogether. He ran the whole length of the quadrangle, you say, without his trousers? That is indecency. It is not the conduct we expect of a scholar."
2 hours later, as Paul crossed the quad, carrying his suitcase, he met the chaplain.
"Well, goodbye, my dear boy.
I suppose that after that reprehensible affair last night, you will have to think of some other profession. Well, you may congratulate yourself that you discovered your unfitness for the priesthood before it was too late. If a parson does a thing of that sort, you know, all the world knows, and so many do, alas. So what do you propose doing?
I don't really know yet.